All right. Hey, this is Cole Camp Police. It's December 21st, 2005. I'm joined with my good friend Chris Millay here in the basement, and we thought we'd talk a little bit about a study that Chris is putting together. He's a PI on here at Penn State University.
Doing a little research out of the Solutions Institute. We're doing a little study on blog usage in the classroom. Specifically, we're looking at a couple different things. We're looking at student outcomes, perception of perceptions of the value of discussion in the classroom, and comfort with student comfort with discussion in the classroom. Perception comfort of using new technologies in the classroom, and really just how really blogs, I guess. Really have a positive impact on the student outcomes and the student perception of
or potentially negative reactions. Sure. That's the beauty of research, right?
Yep, we're definitely open to that finding.
Hey, it's a finding. That's what's sort of neat about the research thing is, you might find out it's great, you might find out it's lame, and you might find out that there's no significant difference.
Right.
But that's what we're doing it, right?
Right. So we've got about 9 sections of IST 110 classes.
And IST 110 is the introductory
Introduction
course.
To Information Sciences and Technology course. I think we have counted the enrollments for all those courses. It's about 300 students, so we're going to get some serious data.
That's good.
Doing about half control, half actual instructors actually using the blogs in the classroom. So.
And what kind of what blog tool are you going to use?
Well, we're kind of back and forth about that right now. I think we're gonna do WordPress. So it's going to be what's considered a single user blog, which means that the instructor will do all the posting and lead the discussion, and the students will do the commenting, as opposed to a multi-user blog, which we've also done using Drupal, which allows the students to do their own posting.
Yeah.
It sort of ends up being more like a discussion board kind of format. So I think for the purposes of this study, kind of keep it simple and just really sort of measure an environment where the instructors are leading the discussion. And then, the students are still off that sort of thread starter. It's doing their own threaded discussion below that, but kind of keeps it in the hands of the instructor to direct the conversation a little bit. So, maybe keep it a little bit on topic and open the possibility. And this is one of the things we're measuring as well is, we're going into this study, setting the blogs up for the instructors, giving them some ideas. And that's one of the things that Cole and I want to talk about on this podcast is some of the possible, things that these instructors can do with the blogs, but really leaving it up to them. And one of the ways that they can take it is basing their thread starters on assignments, really keeping it keyed into, some of the specific objectives of the class. Another way that some people might take it is to kind of leave it open and sort of a more traditional sort of blog, sort of journal approach where instructors are just posting interesting things in the IT field that, as they think of things, as they come across things, posting it and, really just allowing a free sort of discussion amongst the students about what they're thinking about and really leaving it up to the students to participate, So, amount of adherence to really a graded sort of assignment versus sort of a free-flowing discussion. So we're not dictating any of that stuff in the study. We're just seeing how different people use it, what works, and what doesn't work, and measuring all that stuff and really collecting data about all that stuff. We're gonna do, collect some data in the beginning of the semester. About halfway through the semester, we'll collect a little bit more data, see how everybody's doing with it, and then at the end of the semester, we'll collect some more data, and then measure the outcomes and the perceived outcomes, how the students feel that it impacted the whole situation of the class, and then also look at their grades and see versus the control if if the blogs actually affected their grades.
Yeah.
We're not just looking at
the
hard grades. We're looking at other sort of perceptual things like
motivation, satisfaction.
Yeah, motivation, satisfaction. Whether they felt that with a blog, they could maybe speak up a little bit more with less risk, and really just speak their minds and work out their ideas in sort of a safe, comfortable kind of atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we hope that they feel that way. Maybe the blog puts more pressure on them. We don't know. Cole's done
four semesters
using blogs in his classes, and I think he's got a good sense of how students use it, and how comfortable students are using it, and what kinds of things they like to post.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll have some real hard data to put behind it and a lot of sections and stuff.
Yeah, and I guess it was a year ago this fall, I tried this, and I actually, Bart Purcell and I put together a study, and we collected a bunch of data we only did it at the end, which was disappointing because, we didn't think about it as a total assessment. We didn't think about end-to-end on it. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to see what students felt at the beginning versus what their reaction was at the end and measure that difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it's a huge difference too, because I think that, for all that we incorporate blogs into our daily lives to really inform us about technology and, mm-hmm. and politics and entertainment and anything. That blogs are sort of...
It's become the format, even of mass media.
Yeah, for a lot of people, but I really don't think that the students...
Yeah.
Even... It surprises me when students say they don't know what a blog is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's so pervasive, and it's such a defining element of what the internet is right now. But maybe I'm just being an internet snob, and I'm just kind of just really focused on the forefront of the technology that's out there right now. And a lot of people just don't know. So the before and after is really significant. In this, I think it's really very interesting to do this study in this day and age, in this particular year, where it's really on the precipice of becoming.
I think we're over the mainstream thing. Yeah, we're over the hump,
right.
And it's becoming. And I don't know if we're over the hump as much as we're over the awareness hump. People are beginning to know.
Mm.
People are beginning to figure out what it is. You don't necessarily have to go through the first five slides of the presentation you did a year ago where you say a weblog is, it's the web and a log, and it's coming, you don't have to do that as much anymore. They get what it is, but I'm not so sure many people really know how to utilize the architecture of a blog.
They don't know the value of it in their day-to-day lives. They don't know the value of it in their education, specifically talking about students. They don't know the value of it in their education. And also as a professional, I've come to understand the value of it as something that informs me about trends, mm-hmm. and especially using sort of the aggregator tools like Technorati and stuff and Daypop, things that kind of bring together.
That pull together the real interesting things that are going on.
Raise that to the top. So, there's hopefully one of the things that we get out of this is sort of informing some students and ways to manage the information better and to really filter the info kind of dump.
The overload that happens. So let's do some level setting because one of the reasons that we're doing this is not only just to get together and talk about it, but we'd like to share it with the faculty that are participating in it.
Right.
So just to do some level setting, the traditional classroom at Penn State is still a very traditional resident instruction model. You show up X number of times, typically 38, 45 times during the semester. But what's beginning to happen, the transformation that's happening on our campus and on many university campuses, is this whole concept of the LMS or CMS. And CMS in this term is a course management system, LMS is a learner management system. At Penn State, we have a university-wide CMS called ANGEL. And ANGEL does the same things that many, many tools do. It does some things really well. It does some other things not so great. But if you looked at the spectrum and you have Sakai at the open source end that's really gaining momentum, the other end, we all have heard of WebCT and Blackboard and the acquisition that happened there. This is an interesting market that's going on. But that aside, faculty typically then, not only do they have their 40-some face-to-face sessions, they engage students in some sort of ongoing dialogue now in the closed, and we have to stress that, I think, the closed environment mm-hmm. of the learning management system or the course management system. And typically the tools inside these tools.
Yeah, that's what they are.
Yeah, the tools inside the overarching space are typically things like message boards, Dropboxes, right?
Yeah.
There really aren't places for collaborative writing. You can argue the merits of a discussion board versus a blog, but I think for this instance, we're not interested in the merits of those two.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, or you're saying, that the blog is an environment that may or may not encourage more open conversation.
Yeah, it is a subtle difference, and really, I hate to say that this is a study about blogs in the classroom. It's more of, a certain particular approach to facilitating discussion in the classroom, mm-hmm. a technology facilitated, discussion in the classroom.
Yeah, so. And I think what's interesting, and I can tell you why I sort of jumped away from the CMS as the center of my class to the blog as the center of my class and my classroom experiences. And it was because I wanted a more free-flowing environment so that I could quickly, if I found something, so you talked about this spectrum of the way faculty can use this thing, and I used it across that spectrum in my single-user blogging experiences. I would do things like I'd be hanging out on a Saturday morning reading my RSS feeds via blog lines,
mm-hmm.
and I'd see something interesting, and I'd jump over to my blog space, and I'd write a short paragraph, this is what I read today, this is the link to that, look at it, come back and talk about it. Excuse me. What was sort of funny about it was that the first couple of weeks, I thought, God, this is really failing.
Mm-hmm.
Until they started to sort of open up. And then what began to happen was that they were discussing individual blog posts almost like they were assignments.
Mm-hmm.
First, I thought that was very, very cool. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. I never had that before inside the LMS
mm-hmm.
Or CMS. The other thing I did is I did my pre-built discussion activities that I would usually do in a message board, post like an actual assignment, and then say, okay, you have to respond here. And what's strange about that is they're responding completely in the open.
Right.
And every student, even though in a message board students can use other students' ideas, they have to click and load. You know what I mean by that? With the whole click on the student's name to see the response. Click on the now.
Right.
Commercial threaded discussion software works a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that too, and that was that worked really well. That worked really well. And like I said, Bart and I collected a little bit of data, and we found that students rated the blogging environment higher than they did the message board environment for conversation.
More that you have to wade through all that clutter. That's the thing about the blogs is it's so simple. You get right at what you do. And you don't have to log in. You don't have to log into anything, which is a concern that this is kind of just open and it's out there.
You don't need to log into anything to read.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Yeah. And we'll have the students have. The only people that are going to be able to comment, obviously, are the students that are enrolled in the class. So we'll lock that then to that extent.
So you will do that.
Yeah.
So you'll make it so that the only people that can comment are those that are enrolled in the class.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. There's things like that, because. There has been, I think with one of your class blogs, somebody kind of just came in and actually, some person from wherever he stumbled onto this blog, probably from a reference from another blog post. That's sort of how these things work, is
mm-hmm.
all these things with all these aggregators sort of get picked up like that. But he actually came on, this person actually came on and posted something pretty.
Well, I've had a couple of instances of
positive.
That.
Useful.
The first time I ever did the blog, and I was using Blogger at the time because that was about all that I could use to get really started. It's before any of us really had an appreciation for WordPress or any of the other open source blogging tools. I had this guy who was following my class blog via his RSS reader, and every now and then he'd jump on and he would actually, in the comments section, post additional questions to students. This guy was a technology officer at some company, mm-hmm. I think around DC or something like that. And that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the time that it really blew my mind was during our governor's school.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a guy from the FBI come in.
Yeah,
and he was from the cybercrime lab.
Yeah.
and he did a guest lecture in the class. The students actually blogged their responses, not really responses, but the reaction, their perception or reaction to his talk, and they were largely negative. The students said things like, "Oh, the FBI's out to get us." You know, you have to imagine these are
off the cuff.
Yeah, kinda, these are 17-18-year-old kids.
Off the cuff for an honor kind of student.
Yeah,
but
and they posted these live. This FBI guy came back across the blogs, read all the posts the students did, and personally responded to each of them with more in-depth information than what he talked about in his. So really, what had happened was the event was over, class period over. The bell rings, everyone leaves. But because they recorded it in an open space,
the learning continued.
The conversation ensued, and the more the FBI guy came back and posted his response, the more feedback trickled down on each of his posts. And students, I actually remember one of the students even typed, you know, "I really wish you would have talked about these kinds of things during your talk and gotten beyond the surface level."
And that's two-way learning experience. The students are learning, and they're learning that they can speak up and have a conversation with, you know, professionals and really have this dialogue and all the things that came that were discovered from the dialogue that was happening. And he got the presenter that got a lot out of it too. He really
One thing he figured out was that he needs to get a little bit more real with his talks.
Yeah, you can't BS to a bunch of
smart kids or students in general. I mean, you know, however you want to classify them along the thing. So you know, it is an empowering thing. It is an empowering thing.
And not just because, and it's not anonymous. In this case, with PGSIT, with the Governor's School, and this person from the FBI, you know, every single thing that these kids posted had their names attached to it. I mean, it's not like these kids were just trying to be smart and...
No, they weren't being smart asses. I mean, they were actually... They were giving their honest reaction to the talk. That's all. And that's all. That's what you ask of them.
Yeah.
Right? You ask them to say, if you're going to have your students take, you know, take part in something like this, a collaborative writing assignment, an individual writing assignment, you want them to take it serious and you want them to give you the straight stuff. What I found amazing about Governor's School was that the students were really open and really honest in the blogs. Really open and honest in the blogs. But now that right there, that represents sort of the second level of this, I'm guessing, is that you're looking at the single user blogging environment where the faculty member controls everything versus the multi-user where you're giving all the kids a voice to do their original thing. And so I've done both of those things as well. And the single user blog is a great thing. It really is, because you can really direct what's going on. The multi-user blog is a great thing because you can sort of let chaos happen. And voices do emerge in your class. Probably more so than in the single blogging environment. But at the same time, if you really take advantage of WordPress and really use, you know, the pages right and the comment system right and all that stuff, you see the same thing. You see certain students sort of, you see their voices come through.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the shallow versus, you know, deep sort of situation where I think that with the instructor posting, you get more directed, get deep into certain particular topics. With the students posting, you get that sort of pseudo chaos situation, maybe with less posts, with less comments, which, you know, that's interesting too. You get certain posts that get a lot of comments and certain posts that don't get so many comments, and it's easy to tell what the interesting topics are based upon how many comments they get versus maybe everybody's just going to post to whatever the instructor does. It's really going to be up to the instructor to provide an environment that makes the blog successful, I think.
Well, so let's talk about a couple of quick strategies. So we've been talking a long time here about this and sort of giving you our feedback and impression on it. Categories. How much guidance are you going to give the instructors as it relates to categories? Because you and I both know from doing this stuff and using these tools, tagging and taxonomy and categories are critical to a lot of things, assessment being one. And I'm not talking about like higher level assessment of the whole situation, but instructor assessment.
You know, I think that, you know, one of the things that we talked about was taking one of your more successful experiences with using WordPress or even using Drupal. I don't think it really matters as far as, you know, what choosing what the categories are, but really not dumping a totally skeleton sort of empty blog onto the instructors to just, you know, totally leave it up to themselves to just
because I can say with Drupal, for example, you set up my environment for me, and then I spent hours configuring it. I mean, it looks almost like an LMS. You know, my multi-user blogging environments.
A whole hierarchy of categories, of taxonomy, a whole taxonomy of vocabulary that students could use to really, I mean, so you set up all these categories. You spent a lot of time on that and really thinking about, you know, how they might tag their information. And then and it did evolve. I think it evolved when we our first experiment, I think, with really using Drupal on a large scale was at PGSIT.
Yeah.
And and that category system evolved over the duration of PGSIT. And I don't think when you got the opportunity to use, you know, Drupal in your 110 regular 110 class.
Yeah, just this past semester.
You really kind of had it nailed. And really students, and for those of you, I mean, this is taxonomies, categories, this is seems like sort of a pretty simple, I don't know, pretty simple idea, but you can really get pretty sophisticated with this. And really, it's just a way of saying, when you post something, my post has to do with this, this, and this.
Yeah, so let's say I'm like the situation I said where I'm sitting on my couch Saturday morning browsing my blog lines and I make a post. The category I might use would be IST 110. That's one vocabulary, one tag. Second tag might be Spring 06, 2006. The third might be Random Thoughts. Now, that's so two of those three are common tags that I would use across my entire semester. But then if I were doing, say, a discussion activity or a specific assignment type, it would be IST 110, Spring 2006. The third tag would be discussion activity. If I were doing something about self-reflection, or I would swap out those tags, because then what you can do is you can set up your own searches that combine those vocabularies. So as an instructor, you can go back and you can say things like, okay, I want to grade all my discussion activities. And then you can select those three categories, hit your search button, and have it pull in just your IST 110 2006 discussion activities, and it makes your life a heck of a lot easier.
And on the other side, the students can follow that same process. It's each tag is a different path for students to get to the information that they want to get to, and they can combine them together. So one sort of search for stuff that a student would be interested in maybe would be 110 assignment or 110 random thoughts, or maybe leave the 110 part out and then just look for random thoughts and you
pick up a whole bunch of other stuff.
Because
the same environment, and now I've done this. So I did the blogger thing that was a pure blog, just a pure 110 blog without anything else in it, just my class stuff. I've done it at my personal blog, my learning and innovation blog, where everything else was mixed in with it. And they actually had to actively, you know, click through to get to the categories. And then this past summer and then this past semester, I did the whole Drupal thing, which has a really powerful category engine. Excuse me. So what I love about that is that I'm a blog lines user. I use an RSS newsreader. It's the way I do my reading on the web. So I could set up feeds that would have all these different things. I'd have one feed that was just for assignments. I'd have one feed for random thoughts. I'd have one feed for student posts. I have one thing for announcements. So when I would look at my folder for IST 110, I would see five or six different feeds in there, and it would have the asterisks, or not the asterisks, but the parentheses with the number, and I could click in and I could see it and I could grade or respond or do whatever I wanted to pretty instantly right there.
So obviously there's a huge continuum of really just using the blogs as a post-comment sort of workflow for discussion in the classroom, all the way up to really refining your information and categorizing your information, and then, you know, a whole another thing being the RSS and really looking at the delivery and optimizing and the streamlining the delivery. And you know, hopefully with this study, we see examples all the way across that continuum of how of the sophistication of the information flow. Hopefully people get the low, you know, the most basic part of it. You know, and touch on the other stuff, you know. And really, I think that one of the things that I'd like to talk about is, you know, just within the realm of instructors posting and students commenting, what are some of the things that instructors can do as far as the content, you know, of their posts, of these discussion starters, you know, to really be effective and getting students motivated and excited to respond and get the flow. Because, you know, this whole thing isn't going to work if the students aren't interested in participating. And it's not going to work, you know, I should be careful. I was going to say, it's not going to work if we force students to, you know, to comment so many times. But, you know, honestly, Cole and I have been doing this for long enough that I think we can say that the value is not, doesn't come from that sort of situation. The the really interesting things don't happen when you force students to do anything.
But at the same time, we're still teaching a course, and there are still so there are learning opportunities that happen all over the place when you're in and outside the classroom, when you have a cohort of people. And what I find very interesting is that learning does take place on multiple levels. You know, I always felt that the blog post for an official assignment was a cool thing, because what it gave me the ability to do that you don't get when you're just having a textbook and a random question, or even an online text like we did with online IST and a question. What I could do in a blog post is I could say, okay, this discussion activity is based on this topic on project management. And say I write this whole paragraph to start about the importance of project management, I can say, and teams are critical, and I can start providing links out to things like Wikipedia's definition on project management, as well as a Harvard business case on it, as well as, you know, on and on and on and on, so you can really contextualize this question well. And really, if you do that the right way, that is your week's worth of reading, because there's so much out there that if you wrap a really interesting topic around it, you can say, okay, you should go off and read this online IST topic. Yeah, that's great. Whatever. You know, that's a week's worth of reading. It's 30 screens of turn, you know, page turning stuff, especially in 110. But then you can say, okay, now, and this is a concept related to, you know, small pieces loosely joined, and you send people off to that site and they can read that. And whether they choose to or not really has very little bearing on the question you're really going to ask them, but you're providing them with opportunities. And the interesting thing that happens then is, so you do this thing about, this is the topic this week, and here are a bunch of pointers to a bunch of readings and resources and stuff like that. Then you get to the question. And then what you end up with is, so what are your thoughts on this? You know, blah, 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 blah. You ask them to answer this. It's worth 10 points out of 1,000. Come on. Who's going to write anything for 10 points? And then what you get is you get sometimes these really insightful comments. And people will say things like, and I never got this inside of my CMS. I really enjoyed looking at small pieces loosely joined. And how do I think that relates to this topic? And that actually occurs. So there are these times when you do have to make assignments. Because you get all, say you have 50 kids in your class, you get all 50 voices. The other stuff, when you do the incidental blog posts, and this is where you have some other interesting learning opportunity going on, it's never the same 8 kids posting on an incidental. It's always the same 1 or 2. But then there's 6 other ones that come in because you're talking about different things.
Yeah, as long as you are talking about different things, get a little bit of variety.
Well, it's funny because I remember specifically in one of my 110 blog posts, it was Green Day had started selling from their website blank CDs pre-printed with Green Day labels. So CDRs with like Green Day labels, CDR jewel case inserts, they were selling this stuff knowing that kids are making mashups of Green Day albums, mm-hmm. right? They're doing rip, mix, burn, mm-hmm. you know, download, mix, burn, whatever you want to do. You know, we're not talking mm-hmm. about the legality of that, but the band figured that out, and they were using the concepts of the new content distribution channels to probably overcome some of the lost revenue that they were seeing from piracy. Right. And it was amazing, the number of kids that posted on that versus in my other things. There was a whole different subset of kids responding to that. Now, what does that have to do with IST 110, other than the fact that Green Day represented that the internet is changing the business models, that the internet has shifted the distribution channels, that the RIAA has really altered the way they're doing business, mm-hmm. and so the band itself thought, you know, why don't we give our customers, our fans, the ability to purchase something from us to play our music on? Mm-hmm. An amazing set of comments, right?
Yeah.
And that's very different than answer this question about project management.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the beauties of us running this study specifically with the 110 class is, you know, we're talking about such broad
yeah.
topics as the, you know, the legal implications and the social implications of information technology.
The emerging technologies, the day-to-day happenings, the policy yeah. stuff, the politics behind it.
Culture.
The global marketplace, you know. Mm-hmm. I had my kids this year listen to and watch a talk Thomas Friedman gave at Harvard about, you know, the world is flat.
Mm-hmm.
And unbelievable responses to that. And I turned that into a week's worth of work for them. Watch this thing. It sounds like a very passive thing, but if you follow it up with an active dialogue and then a lecture in the classroom, you get something interesting there. Do you think you'll do any, will you do, what, okay, so let me back up. So the one thing that's tough about this
mm-hmm.
is it requires the faculty member
right. yep.
to be a more active
yep.
participant in the context of what we just talked about, what is IST 110.
Sure.
It requires, if you're going to do this and do this well, you have to be pointing these things out to students. You have to yep. be sending them there.
Yep.
And it's our jobs as faculty and instructors and in this information sciences thing. Do you think you'll provide faculty with a sort of a recommended reading list or anything like that?
Well, I don't know. You know, one of the interesting phenomena as far as this whole, you know, what's called the blogosphere is sort of this... I don't know what you call it. You know, somebody picks up a story, somebody pick sort of one of these sort of A-list
bloggers,
sort of alpha geek kind of people, yeah. picks up on a story, posts it on this blog, and then these other people pick it up and they put their own sort of spin on it, and then they got their own blogs with their own commenters. I think that it would be really interesting as far as, you know, really establishing sort of a blogging academic blogging community within IST and then maybe within PSU in general is to sort of set up this network. So maybe having a, you know, we have blogs at SI is one mm-hmm. of one of the things that we do where we kind of post things that are interesting to us within
the social institute. By the way, I haven't seen a whole lot of posts at the blogs.
Yeah, no, that's you know, we know the pitfalls of blogging and where it can fall apart as far as, you know, how much, you know, energy you put into, you know, time and energy.
I've thought about blogging there recently, but I didn't know if I'd get in trouble for that.
Still an account there. But, you know, yeah, I think that, but, you know, maybe, you know, this is a good opportunity to start posting there. You know, and it's something that these instructor bloggers can kind of pick up on and maybe select certain things that they feel meet up with the objectives of their class. Yeah, and also listing other blogs that they can check out and, you know, or whatever. Pick up whatever interesting things that you come across, you know, in your daily surfing or mm-hmm. emails that people send you. You know, I think that as an ISC instructor, you've got to be, you know, really part of a pretty rich information flow that there are things that you can really share with your students.
And I think that I think that most faculty are very engaged in their field.
Mm-hmm.
What's difficult about this is what you're doing is you're really, if you do this well, you're really extending the reach of your classroom. You're sort of taking the walls and just ripping them down, opening the door up to your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, a lot of people walk out of that room. And what's interesting is with a space like this, and I think presumably with a space like Angel, you can make learning happen 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night as opposed to 10:15 a.m. to 11:20, you know, on a Tuesday and a Thursday. You can sort of break those barriers down. You know, our friend Brian always talked about what's really interesting about the classroom is what happens when you're not sitting in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when if you can figure out a way to get those students hooked on this stuff, when they're not sitting in that square box in those rows like they're operating sewing machines back in the, you know, the 1920s, boy, you've won their hearts and minds. But now with a blog, as a faculty member, you step out onto that edge too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be the one out there engaging students on a full-time basis. Because let me tell you, if you write it, they will come. That's one thing I learned. And when you watch your traffic, and you're going to install some sort of a statistics tool inside there, like a short stat or something that'll...
Yeah, we'll track everything.
So a faculty member will actually be able to go in there. The instructor will be able to go in and see the kind of traffic they're getting. And let me tell you, that blows your mind when you see that. Because one thing I think is just as from a blogger to some emerging bloggers, don't be put off by the lack of comments. And I'll tell you a little story. So I'm a blogger at the Apple Digital Campus Exchange. And, you know, we get about 6,000 unique page views a day. We each get about one comment a month.
Yeah.
So you tell me what's going on there. Right? There are a lot of people coming and looking. A lot of people coming and lurking. And your students are going to do the same thing.
Right.
And it, you know, and but you know what's interesting is it takes that icebreaker.
Yeah.
So you talked about blogs at SI. So Bill Rose, another one of our colleagues, worked at the Institute for some time. And he was there during the blogs at SI sort of pilot, sort of rollout. And we kept encouraging people up and down our hallways to blog. And I remember Bill saying it took him like 2 hours to make his first blog post, and he was terrified to hit that submit button. Because in your mind, on a perceptual level, the second you hit that submit button, the whole world is in. The whole world's watching. So my advice to the faculty bloggers, get in there early. Write a bunch of stuff. Leave your comment, leave your posts open. You know what I mean by that? Don't just say facts. Don't say there are, you know, 644 people that show up at the hub every day to do this. Talk about why would 644 people show up at the hub every day to do this.
Right.
Leave when it. This is happening in this space. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. You know, leave your posts sort of open-ended. Don't close the discussion off, you know.
Before it starts.
Don't say everything that needs to be said, you
know. And feel comfortable about joining the community.
Yeah.
See yourself as a peer in this space. It's not locked down inside of a CMS. It's not in a message board. This is not formal learning. The goal, I think, is to encourage informal stuff. So write as if you're not concerned about perfect grammar and perfect spelling.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I definitely, that's always been my approach to blogging, is to speak in a somewhat conversational manner. I think that is more conducive to commenting than if you post something that's a little strict in its manner.
You just gotta sit down and stream of consciousness. It feels pretty damn good after you do it for a while, and you start to write, and you start to be able to. You begin to be able to read your own thoughts in a way that you never really realized, and you start to see patterns in your thinking, and you start to see patterns in what your students are doing. And, you know, we've talked almost exclusively about why blogging is so cool and so good.
Sure.
But there's a whole shitload of stuff that basically speaks in the other direction, that there are some real issues here. And, you know, Wikipedia is in a little bit of trouble. right? Yeah. Because of the whole open community-based stuff.
How accurate is this
right.
information?
And not only that, but, you know, what can you do in the open versus what you can do behind the closed walls of university-wide authentication systems? Mm-hmm. University-wide authentication systems are there for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. One of them really is to protect the things that faculty and students say and do and use in the classroom, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. The other thing is this environment is natively going to support podcasts.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, maybe we can do some little training on that, you know? Let people contribute a little audio. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to... It's not necessarily something we're going to measure, but...
Nope.
But, I mean, that might tie in a little bit to one of the questions that we're asking, which is how comfortable are students with using, or instructors with using mm-hmm. technologies in the classroom? And
yeah, I mean, I've done that too. I've tried a whole boatload of different ways to podcast in my class. And I tried the, let me read the lecture, let me talk about random thoughts. And what it came down to with classroom podcasting for me was quick feedback. Students seem to enjoy the whole, here's my feedback podcast and listen to it. And they don't use them as podcasts, you know, Chris. I mean, they're not using the RSS feed necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a handful of my students last semester use the RSS to keep track of the blogs, but most of them just show up and read. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, realistically, that's what's going to happen. And you know, we're really getting at some pretty basic things here. And really, my hope is that instructors, you know, really understand what gets students excited, really kind of maybe post some pretty, I don't know, provocative mm-hmm. is the right word, but really we're hoping that this is going to help students think that it's going to help them. You know, really, where the real learning happens is when students are formulating their own answers to questions. They're really kind of, you know, being a little bit creative about their responses.
And wouldn't it be interesting if you found that it did the same for the instructor? Mm-hmm. That it really helped the instructor stretch themselves and think beyond, express themselves in a more creative way. Mm-hmm. That, to me, would be an unbelievable sort of concept if it came to light. If you all of a sudden heard faculty saying, I've changed the way and I've changed my appreciation for and I look at this differently and I do this differently. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it made me really reassess the way I was using technology to contribute to my courses. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for me, is the fact that it makes me re-prep my class every single semester. I have not, in the last four times I've taught, been able to reuse much. Mm-hmm. I basically throw it all away and start over again because I want to see how I can do this better. That's what you want, right? But, mm-hmm. God, I don't have that kind of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when I first started teaching, I used online IST, buy the book, this is the way it is, you do these assignments, you got 15 weeks, it was pre-programmed and that was that. Now it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm going in fresh every time, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. So, parting thoughts?
Oof. Well, I hope that we've kind of supplied the instructors. Really, the goal of doing this... Well, first of all, that one of the goals of doing this was to use a blog-related technology, right. Podcasting to provide a little bit of inspiration to the instructors as to where you can really take this.
Right.
We don't expect everybody to podcast, of course, but I think that the conversational tone, you know, of this whole thing and really just the flow of ideas mm-hmm. that we've had. I mean, it's not like Cole and I sat here and scripted this whole thing.
We don't have any notes.
We just sat down, you know, and started talking about this. And
I mean, literally 2 seconds before we started, we said, who's going to start? You going to start? I'm going to start.
I mean, that's really a template for how everybody should be using the blogs, you know, to some extent. And you know, I really just hope that we've provided some inspiration and some ideas for you. And you know, at least I can say it myself that I'm here to help you come up with some different ideas for how you might use the blogs in the classroom. And you know, we provided a link to some of the Cole's prior blogs to look at too, to see.
Yeah, and so I apologize for all the other random thoughts that get dropped into my blog space.
But the 110 blogs, using WordPress, which you're going to be using, and using the Drupal also. And, you know, and really just, you know, there's a certain amount of responsibility for you to contribute that top level stuff, and it's a learning experience for you to see what the students are really, what students are really going to be interested in, what they're going to comment in. And it's very easy to get discouraged really early on. Like Cole said, don't get discouraged when the students maybe aren't commenting.
Hang in there.
Just keep going at it. Uh-huh. And because you're learning how to use this stuff, the students are also learning how to do it. This is pretty new stuff.
So they're
learning too. And I think that, you know, even if it takes halfway through the semester, when that aha moment happens with your students, you're going to be rewarded and amazed by the sort of things that start happening and the sort of churning in their minds that starts happening.
Yeah, and you know what I would say if I were giving you some advice is start the semester with this. You know, in the first week, really introduce the environment to the students and really try to talk to them about how you feel as though you're going to use it, and really clearly articulate what your expectations of them are. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say, I have X number of points for collaboration and communication, make sure some of those are associated to the blog, right? And, you know, are allocated to that. Mm-hmm. You know, give them a really solid rundown on how do I make a comment on a single post. Talk to them about the philosophy of the blog. Talk to them about how a blog works. You know, the reverse chronological order of postings, that your newest post is on top. And, you know, you really have to, like, you know, Chris started out by talking about that many students don't know what this is really all about. You really have to, you almost have to educate them, but you're doing them a service by educating them, because this concept is a new media, part of a new media explosion. Mm-hmm. I mean, the concept of citizen journalism is really changing the face of the way we do things. And you're doing them a service as information scientists, future information scientists, to make them aware of how the technology works. Sure. So, you know, you got to do it. You got to use it. Introduce them to this. Introduce them to RSS. Mm-hmm. Study up on it. Mm-hmm. Take a look at it. It's important. It could change the way you guys do your research. That's the other thing, is that RSS is a very empowering technology, and blogging is a pretty amazing concept in and of itself.
I think that the students that do come to that aha moment, you know, that really get it at some point, really start to really understand how to express their ideas and articulate their ideas, and really are encouraged to do that in this environment, are really going to be empowered in their future classes, and really just be able to just go into their future classes.
Yeah,
really
go to the next level with having a deeper understanding. Yeah. And hopefully you have a deeper understanding as an instructor of the power of managing your content in a new way. Mm-hmm. And you know, the blog is a very empowering personal content management system. And I use my learning and innovation blog for a lot of things other than just public postings. There's a lot of stuff that I see on the personal side when I'm logged in that the general public doesn't see on the outside. Mm-hmm. So do that, you know, take advantage of the environment. Man, we've talked a long time, Chris. 49 minutes.
Yeah, we've gone longer.
Oh, we've gone a lot longer. We've done a 4-hour podcast. So I guess what I'd say, you know, use the resources. Feel free to contact me, Cole at psu.edu. You can send me email. I'll do my best to respond to you. I'm sure Chris would say the same thing.
Sure. Yeah. And with all your invitation emails, that you have plenty of ways to contact the Solutions Institute, and everything from the mundane technical support to, you know, helping you out with some ideas of what to do, and whatever you need, we're here for you, and you know, just shoot us an email. And
can I, anything?
anything.
Well, you did bring me dinner tonight.
Meaning of life. Yeah.
Thanks.
If you need Chris, wings, I got some good recommendations for places to go get wings.
Yeah, so, you know, you can just contact Chris and he'll bring you dinner.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is use your new microphone and PowerBook to
Wait, I just did the IRB thing. We're not allowed to coerce.
Oh, we're not. Okay.
Subjects.
Scratch that. We'll cut that out in post-production. All right, Chris. It was fun talking to you, man.
You too, man.
As always. So, Cole Camp Lease and my good friend.
Chris Millay. And good luck, everybody. And
keep blogs alive.
Going.
Yeah, and take we'll care. Put there'll be music about right here, probably in the post-production. But if not, from the basement, learning innovation, blogs at SI, Cole Camp Lease, Chris Millay, December 21st, a very special introductory podcast.
All right, good luck, guys.
Okay, later.